This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hey, how you be on this Thursday? Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show. Players back out on the practice field indoors today with rain coming down all day today. Going to be a soaker. So the team went indoors to get an effective and efficient practice underway. And we'll get you practice updates in just a minute as they just took the field about 30 minutes ago, give or take. And we're a day closer to Super Wild Card Weekend. They only added that in the last couple of years, Steve. When they went to a triple header Sunday, and then they added Monday night, it became super. The seventh seed came in and there was three games.
Well, you think too,
for each conference.
It's only been, well, I don't know, in our lifetime, but it's only been the last. Well, that every game became a standalone. It used to be they played them like a regular Sunday skillet.
I think they used to do two Saturday, two Sunday. Now, you got one on Monday, two on Saturday, and three on Sunday.
Yeah,
it is super,
super duper.
So I would call it a super wild card weekend.
It's yeah.
Would you say?
I'm telling you though, I've said it. I think these games turn out to be the most exciting ones.
I was just going to ask you, would you say this is the best playoff weekend or is divisional round the best playoff weekend? Some people still love the Final Four.
Here's the thing.
Championship weekend.
It's pretty good. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of the super-sized one, you know.
Yeah, been a couple of years.
Because it used to be, and I'll say it again, you used to get these wild card teams that come in, and some of them are coming down to the wire. You're trying to get in, and there's only six teams in there, and the last two spots – are big because the one and two got a bye.
Yeah.
So you had two barely winning division teams that sometimes the four and five would flip with the three and the four. Like Baltimore, Tennessee.
Tennessee was out.
Right, exactly. They're in and they're out and they're in there. So they all get in. These teams, the four of those teams get in and they're like, they have that rush. Then they carry it over into the next week. And wild card weekend was awesome. I mean, you get like the greatest comeback was a wild card game. You know, you get all these games that are off the charts, but then divisional round, those two teams that win that walk into two teams that were rested at home. Yeah, it was the divisional round was a massacre. I mean, it was just terrible. It was the wild card was always better than that.
There always seems to be one upset on wild card weekend. Do you have any early choices for, like, the Giants over the Vikings, maybe? Or
I could see that.
Jags are the higher seed against the Chargers. I don't even know who you'd consider the underdog.
That wouldn't be an upset. I like that. That's a good game. 10-7, 10-7 going against each other. That's not right. 9-8 going against 10-7, and the Chargers have the 10-7 record, the lower seed.
They're the sixth seed.
You can make a case for Baltimore Cincinnati because they played each other and Baltimore, without
Giants
Lamar.
Played the Vikings earlier this year, went right down to the wire, and the Giants just couldn't get it done at the end. Another victim of late game heroics by the Vikings.
I like the Giants' ability to go and play those guys. The Giants are a team that they don't beat themselves, and we know we all believe or have convinced ourselves that the Vikings are a mirage because of
I got to say, the Vikings got to be the most disrespected 12-win team going, I think, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just from the Bills game.
Well, right.
Forget about the other 10.
Oh, they have a handful of others.
Forget about the other 10 single possession games that they escaped with. And we had I don't know whether it's Chris Trapasso, friend of the show we had on or whatever. You go back and do the research on these one-score games.
13-4. They weren't even 12.
You go to these one-score games, and these teams have these seasons. And the Bills were there. Remember the narrative early this season, they couldn't win a one-score game. They were whatever. It all evens out.
Yeah.
Those one-score games, in the end, you look at the big picture, it's all 50-50, who wins, who loses.
Viking fans would argue that Vikings it are evened living out from last year when they lost 5-1 score games, including three at the gun.
They're overdue by five now to go the other way.
They have 10-1 score
out.
Games? Is that what they
10
have?
10 or 11. So I'm thinking that, you know, it might just even out on them.
Yeah, they beat the Giants 27-24 in week 16. They just played 3 weeks ago.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I think they have 9 or 10.
8, 9, 10, 11 one-score games for the season. Now, one-score game, too, it's 8 points in one-score game these days, one-possession game. So I get that. There's a couple of those in there. 11. 11.
Isn't that wild?
Their losses were both by, you know, big margin. All three losses were by big margins. All four losses were by big margins. And 11 of their 13 wins were by one possession.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, bro.
Made the plays when they had to.
I hate to say it, they are due.
They are due. I wouldn't debate that.
And the Giants are the Giants. That's their wheelhouse, man. They can't beat anybody by more than one score. They're not that good.
Yeah, I think they're among the league leaders in one score losses this year. As a matter of fact, how crazy is that? You got a team in the Vikings who led the league in one score victories. Meanwhile, the Giants have won. 4 one-score losses, and a tie.
They got eight of their nine wins
were by one score.
Yeah.
So these are
two teams.
These are two teams.
They are right in their
that play the exact same way.
I don't know what
the Giants because they don't have a talented enough roster.
Yeah.
The Vikings because I don't know why.
I don't have any. I don't have any knowledge about what the betting line is for this or the point give or take. It don't matter. It's going to be it's going to be close. It's going to be close, I think. Both that's where these teams live, these two teams, the Giants and the Seattle. But that's the game that I think if you're looking for a finger quotes upset, that's the one right there. That's the one. The number 7 or number 6 seed Giants against the number 3 seed Minnesota, that's an upset to me. 13-4 against 9-7, and I'm liking the 9-7 guys.
Okay, fair enough. There was a transaction today, and Bill's practice updates may explain that. So we will tell you that Bill's practice updates are presented by LECOM, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine, and they added Cole Beasley to the 53-man roster, released Justin Murray, a reserve offensive lineman, to make room for Beasley on the roster. The impetus for this, we believe, is the injury suffered by Isaiah McKenzie in practice yesterday.
Right.
Popped up on the injury report for the first time yesterday with a hamstring injury, limited in practice, so we can only presume that took place during Wednesday's practice. We did not see him out there today during the media viewing portion of practice, so it looks like, for all intents and purposes, Beasley has essentially replaced McKenzie in the lineup for the time being. And we know hamstring injuries, Steve. You don't just come back from those in a couple of days. Those are usually at least a week, and then depending on the severity, sometimes longer. So Isaiah McKenzie's status suddenly in doubt for Sunday's game against the Dolphins. But you've got a proven veteran to step up to the plate in his place.
That's exactly why Cole Beasley got signed, this exact scenario. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And obviously, this close to the game, and you get one of your guys going down, you got to have a backup. You got to have you make the call and do it. Get him on the field. Get him some reps. Beasley, it's not going to be too big for him. And he's been up and down last month and a half. He's been on the field.
Got elevated three times.
Right. So he's
didn't get a lot of snaps, but
nobody's got catches.
He's got two catches.
Every kind
He got 11 snaps 1 week, 6 snaps another week, and then he's been called up three times. So he wasn't active last week because they had used all three practice squad elevations in the postseason. Practice squatters can be elevated as many times as you need them, but that's not even a part of the equation anymore with Beasley because he's on the active roster. So if McKenzie can't go, how much do you see Beasley's reps increasing, knowing in the last few weeks, Steve, Khalil Shakir has seen right. more and more of the field?
You've still got Khalil Shakir as an option. And yeah, against the Dolphins, I don't know if it's the smart thing to do or if it's even on the table or whatever. To me, you spread those guys out. You make them declare what they're going to do. Give them some motion and some shifts. And pluck them apart. Hmm. I think the ball's got to come out of Josh's hands this week. The only chance, I think the best chance, the best chance the Dolphins have defensively in this matchup is to get Allen on the ground and to get him and not – you keep him in the pocket. Don't let him be running around out there. You gotta force him to beat you with his arm. And then – match up. And if that's the case, if that's what I believe as a Bills coach, to me that means spread him out, give him quick options right off the snap, and let him pick his spot and get rid of it and beat him that way. I don't know if I'm in the ballpark if what that's what they're gonna do, but to me that's where I start. I motion and shift him, get him to declare exactly what coverage they're in, give a couple of slot guys, either Beasley and Diggs or Beasley and Shakir, whoever, give them some option routes on the inside to find the dead area and just hit them and
I'm
move down
you
the
right
field.
Now, Cook or Hines underneath against those linebackers.
Now, the problem
I like
is,
that matchup.
The problem is it takes as close as they are to the quarterback, it takes them a while to get past the line of scrimmage,
it does.
Give them a move and run. I might want the ball out of Josh's hands a little faster than that, but certainly.
If you're spreading the field, yeah.
Certainly. I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you. Give those guys a chance to contribute.
The other absence, at least from our vantage point during the media viewing portion of practice, was Jordan Phillips. He's been fighting and battling through a shoulder injury for the better part of the last month, and he was not seen during the media viewing portion of practice. We'll see what his official status is when Thursday's injury report pops up. Jordan Poyer was out there participating, so we'll get all the updates when the Thursday injury report is released. Practicing for a second day, both Jamison Crowder and Micah Hyde. Those two, as you know, began a 21-day practice window yesterday. So today is day two. And both of those guys running around out there. Micah Hyde still in a red non-contact jersey. So those are essentially the practice updates that you need to know. Beyond that, the Dolphins injury report, Steve, long. Super long. Did you see it yesterday by any chance?
I did.
I mean, you're talking.
It was oof.
It was, I mean, you had like 15 guys on there.
Yeah, seven of the guys. There's 15 guys on the injury report. Eight didn't practice. Seven did not practice. Four of those seven were offensive linemen, starting with the left tackle.
No, you were right. Eight didn't practice.
That's right. Eight didn't practice. And, of course, of that, you know, one of them was Tua. Three tackles. Kendall Lamb, Brandon Shell, Taron Armstead, and a guard, Liam Eichenberg.
Well, three starting offensive linemen.
Yeah.
A starting defensive end, Bradley Chubb, starting running back,
Raheem Mostert,
and backup Teddy Bridgewater's limited. So is the backup running back, Jeff Wilson. Jalen Waddle's limited with an ankle injury. I mean, limited guys you would presume can, you know, as long as it's not serious, they can get back into the practice fold as the week wears on. So limited guys always have a chance, but the shoe is on the other foot than where it was in week eight. Remember week three.
Yeah.
Remember week three when the Bills had five defensive starters out? They didn't have their starting center, Mitch Morse. And by the end of the game, they had no offensive linemen left.
Right.
Except the five that were on the field.
Right.
The next offensive lineman was going to be Quentin Morris, the tight end, if they had another injury.
Yeah.
So
that's the way it goes, man.
It's amazing how it's completely flipped. And now Miami's got the major injury
and issues. Yeah, there's no predicting it, and there's nothing, you know, it's fortune. I mean,
Luck's involved. Anybody luck that's played involved. In the NFL playoffs will tell you luck's involved.
I'll say this, though, and I have long thought it. This year made me doubt it a little bit when they were having such injuries in the first half of the season and then throughout as well. I thought, well, maybe it's not as part of their program to stay healthy as we thought it was. Maybe it's not something they're doing. Maybe they don't have this magic elixir that keeps them healthy like it did the 2 or 3 years before this year. But once again, they're headed into the playoffs as healthy as they can be without the guys they've lost to season enders. They're as healthy as they can be. Now, you know, with the exception now, yesterday, Isaiah McKenzie snaps a hammy, however bad that is. We don't know. But they got Cole Beasley waiting in the wings, which he wasn't here in week three.
Correct.
So they, you know, Brandon Bean, once again, I mean, so much goes on that we don't know about. You always hear about, these guys like Justin Murray. Bills fans may not know who he is. He's an offensive lineman. He had to be cut so they could bring Cole Beasley on. So, you know, all this stuff goes on. Brandon Bean is a master. I mean, to have this roster sitting where it is going into the playoffs and as healthy as it is, it's not just Bean. Bean has the guys here, and McDermott keeps them fresh and healthy and gets – and once again, they seem to be crescendoing, as the point I was trying to make earlier. Not only are they getting healthy as they can be with – guys who have season enders, and we thought one of them was a season ender, and Micah Hyde. Now he's back. So, once again, they're crescendoing headed into the tournament. And I don't know if – maybe I'm seeing more than there is there, but, man, oh, man, that –
It's important.
They seem to be doing that at the end of seasons every year, and it's
pretty
impressive.
You want to be as healthy
as you can. Yeah, it's pretty
impressive.
I mean,
you can't win all the battles, and it's not perfect. I mean, I think we'll all agree it's hard to be perfect after 17 regular season games to have a fully healthy roster, no matter what preventative measures that you take. But all things considered, they're in pretty decent shape right now. Knock on wood. Find some wood to knock on here.
Yeah.
Because I'll knock on it 7 ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
The league made an announcement today, and I'm surprised they made this announcement already. As you know, should the Bills and Chiefs meet in the AFC title game, it will be at a neutral site. So I'm thinking like, they'll probably, post that after this week's set of games, provided, you know, the Bills and the Chiefs are still alive. And then heading into the divisional round, if they win that game as well, they'll know where they're going. The league announced it today. They announced that the AFC Championship game, if it is in fact the Bills and Chiefs, which as we know was deemed to be a neutral site game last week by the league in a vote by the owners, it will take place in Atlanta at their dome stadium down there where the Falcons play. So there it is. I know the Bills are not even worried about that right now. They're focused on the Dolphins. I mean, if all you had to do was listen to Coach McDermott yesterday. How many times did he say, we're just focused on this game?
Right.
This week, right now.
That's how he got to that line about it not being a soap opera. You know,
that's right.
We're not keeping track of all that stuff.
That's
drama. We don't need that. We're worried about this game, and that's where they should be. And we knew that when the incident happened in Cincinnati that took the game off the table, and they were going to start saying, okay, well, here, that doesn't seem fair, so here's what we'll do. And they're going to start tinkering with it. You knew it was not going to be fair. The Bills were robbed of a chance to get the one seed. To keep the one seed.
Yeah.
Cincinnati was robbed of their ability to get the one seed. Kansas City was given the one seed with a win, obviously. They had to beat,
Denver.
Win on Denver. But they were given the one seed in the end of it and a free pass, a bye, for the first round of the playoffs. None of it was fair. Because it couldn't be it wasn't going to be decided on the field. So you knew it was going to be unfair. And Cincinnati Bengals really do have a beef in this whole thing. They really do have a beef. And by that token, so do the Bills. And, I don't know what the Chiefs would complain. The Chiefs can complain about the fact that they got the one seed and they don't get the home field for the championship game.
Well, they do for every team except the Bills, who are ahead of them in the standings. I mean,
right.
They made out the best, as far as I'm concerned, because they're the team that still got the dang bye.
Right. The bye is the carrot that everybody kind of shot
for. They're not playing
for.
This weekend.
And the Bengals, they're the ones that kind of got kicked. You know, they were leading a game that got stopped. Granted, it was very, very early.
Yeah, 7-3.
But they're sitting there with a chance to get there.
Right.
So, and now they're on the road for anybody except the Bills and the Chiefs. So, they're hoping for an upset, and that's their only hope. So, yeah, you knew it was not going to be fair, and not everybody was going to be happy and when the game got taken off the table. But, you know, here we are, and this neutral site, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole. The league has, you know, they've toyed with that for a long time, having the championship games at neutral sites.
Mm. Like the Super Bowl, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, it was a part of the Tasker plan in NFL City. I have always said
NFL City, right,
that it should be a neutral site. Yeah.
Elsewhere.
Have the championship games at the Super Bowl City.
Yeah, elsewhere around the NFL. Mike LaFleur, the offensive coordinator for the Jets, and the Jets have agreed to part ways. We heard reports on this yesterday, kind of trickling out, and that has in fact now happened. They are retaining their quarterbacks coach. No word on whether he'll be promoted to OC or whether they'll bring a new OC in, which could mean a new offensive system for Zach Wilson to learn, as they still have their wagon hitched to him. At least that's what they said at the end. So there's that. Lamar Jackson missed practice again yesterday, lending further credence that it could be third-string quarterback Anthony Brown as the starter for the Ravens against the Bengals, because Tyler Huntley is not healthy either. He's dealing with a shoulder injury. You want to talk about a veritable mess for the Ravens and the Dolphins. Both teams may have to start their third-string quarterbacks this week. That is just,
and you know, and those teams.
Good grief!
There's no love lost for Bills fans and Dolphins fans and all of that, and same thing for Cincinnati and Ravens fans for sure. I mean, we're both division opponents, but you can feel for them when you get to this point, and this is your reward. You go on the road into a place that's tough to play against one of the elite quarterbacks in the league, and all your guys are hurt, all of them.
Yeah.
Not just your quarterbacks, both top two quarterbacks. But, you know, you wait all this long, these many months for an opportunity, and you get handed this. And it's not nothing that the Bills did to the Dolphins. It's nothing that the Bengals did to the Ravens. But you'd like to know what that Dolphins team from weeks, what was it? 5-6 and 5-8, 5-10, weeks 5-10 or something. They had that 5-game winning streak. They looked unbeatable.
They weren't playing some of the better teams in the league at the time, but you can't blame them for who's on their schedule.
Think about the mind frame that fan base was in for a minute there. Oh my goodness. They were nuts, and rightfully so.
We have arrived.
Right. And you know, and Baltimore has got Lamar, who's playing for a contract and just laying it out there every week. And they've always been tough to beat. And then that happens to them. I mean, it's, you know.
They can't score points without Lamar. I don't think they've scored more than 14 points.
Right. They
haven't in any scored other 20 games without him.
Without him. So, yeah, it's you can feel for him. But that's nobody's fault. You know,
it's just not unfortunate.
Not the league, not their opponents. It's nobody. It's just, ugh.
And Lamar finished the season injured last year, and they didn't even make the playoffs, if you remember. So the durability factor is an issue here with Lamar. You wonder how that's going to be worked into whatever contract extension he signs.
It makes a mess of that.
You may have to incentivize it. Well, if you play 90% of the snaps, you get this bonus. If you play 80% of the snaps, you get this bonus. Because the last 2 years have ended with him injured.
Right. Let me just...
And one time it cost you the playoffs, and you may not win in the first round this year because you don't have them again.
Let me just tear my heart out and stick it in the freezer and make it as cold as ice. Here's what you do.
Okay.
You franchise him.
Well, yeah, that's an option.
For 2 years, and then you let him walk.
Okay.
And I hate to say it this way, they use him up and just turn him loose, and that's it. And if they go to the big game, you do it again. Franchise him.
Hmm.
Because.
Well, this is a team that learned the hard way.
Joe Flacco.
About waiting on a contract.
Yeah.
And then Joe Flacco goes all the way, wins the Super Bowl and the MVP, Super Bowl MVP. And They have no choice. They have to sign him to a monster extension.
He was the highest paid player in the league.
And, you know, he was an above average quarterback, but he was not a top five guy.
And the bottom fell out fast.
Well, yeah, because he signed it, I think, at age 32. I think he was like in his early 30s when he signed the thing.
Maybe. I don't know if he was that old, but yeah, whatever. I mean, it did not.
Or maybe not. Maybe it was 29.
It was not. Yeah, it was not.
And then they got stuck on the hook with that thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the game you play. When's the right time? How many years do we commit? How much money are we committing? You know, after learning the hard way the last time, they may just franchise him, Steve. You might be right on the money with that.
It's a big number. It's like $43 million. But it's a one-year deal.
Yeah, he plays out of it easy.
And if it's not,
and it's guaranteed for him as soon as he signs.
Sure, he signs. He gets the money. Cool. And you've all this time, you've still got the chance if you feel so inclined to sign him to an extension. But for him, and I'll say this too for Lamar, given what we've seen around the National Football League, it's a smart thing for him too. It worked for Kirk Cousins.
That's one guy it did work out for.
And it's worked out for other guys, too. I mean,
not to any great playoff success.
Getting to free agency is the holy grail. And let me tell you something. You don't think Deshaun Watson did the right thing? Oh, my gosh. That guy was, like, untouchable. All it takes is one owner to make that kind of mistake. And, Lamar is he's a former MVP. And he's young. He's like younger than college quarterback. He's younger than Stetson Bennett.
Yeah, I think he's 24, 25. He's right there.
Goodness gracious. If I'm Lamar, I just get to free agency somehow, some way.
Well, he might be waiting at least a year. There's another report on a quarterback. Did you see this one? Tom Brady signing with the Dolphins in free agency is, quote, definitely on the table. Are we going to go down that road again, Stephen Ross, after you already got punished by losing a first-round draft choice and getting a fine because you tampered with Tom Brady? You're going to go down the same road again? Are you? Come on. Really?
What can I say?
I guess
some draft picks and
you can have them.
You can. He's not the same guy.
Whether it's him or Tua, you can have.
He's still a great quarterback. He's still way ahead of the game mentally, but he'll be 46 next year.
I don't even care.
And you should care. We should care. You're talking about the Dolphins.
I know.
And you know, every team in the league, most teams, not every team. That's not true. I don't want to say every team. A lot of teams in the league will be better with that guy than whatever guy they got.
That's valid.
And
what do you
with Tyreek and Waddle?
I know.
We've never seen that except for when 2007 or 2008 when Brady was like 19-1.
Yeah. So what do you think is more likely? Brady in Miami next year? Or Brady in Las Vegas next year with Josh McDaniels. Does he play for Mike McDaniel or Josh McDaniels?
I think it's Mike McDaniel because from what I heard somebody say this morning that Brady's kids live in Miami.
Okay.
And if he can choose.
Yeah.
You know.
Boy.
I'll say this, though. Josh
McDaniels. Rough year for Tua.
What do they pay him?
Yeah, I mean, 1 year, 2 years, who knows?
That's a
1 year with an option.
Ross will pay big time in Miami. He's got to. Now he's going to have to put his money where his mouth is.
He doesn't want to be denied, clearly, if there's legitimacy to this report, and there's no reason to think there isn't, especially in the past history. Right. I mean, he went to tampering lengths to try to get him the last time. I'd like to think that if people are reporting that it's an option again this offseason, that it probably is.
Wow.
Crazy, isn't it?
It is.
Twitter topic on the table for you today. What's the one thing you want to see from the Bills in their playoff game against the Dolphins? Anything's on the table there, man. Like, is there something that you'd really like to see in this game, in this matchup? You let us know. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The number to get on board. Got open lines for you. Steve and I back with your phone calls and a little bit of sound bits coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Hey everybody, Micah Hyde's charity softball game benefiting his Imagine for Youth Foundation returns to Salem Field, home of the Buffalo Bisons, on Sunday, May 7th at 1 p.m. Tickets are now on sale, and you can get yours for only $23 by visiting bisons.com. Time for us, though, now, in this week's edition of Sound Bids, presented by Tim Hortons, we're going to hear from Josh Allen and some of his teammates on safety, Micah Hyde's return to practice for the first time since his injury earlier this season.
I didn't sleep last night, and not because I was like nervous or anything. I was just too excited. I was too excited. I've been in all the meetings. I've been rehabbing every day. I've been a part of this thing for a while, and I just love these guys. I think everything happens for a reason. I'm very, very grateful to be in the position that I am right now, and to see my teammates throughout this whole season, all the things that we have been through, you name it, the weather, the injuries, D-Ham situation, just all this stuff, just seeing my boys, my teammates, go out there and continue to fight. It wouldn't be, I have to make it, I have to give it a go. I have to, and so this is a special group. I've been saying it all along, and I'm just glad I can be a part of it today.
Micah is so peaceful, and he's so happy. But seeing him, progress, and Micah speaking about first week of playoffs, I'm going to be back out there. And it's the first practice of playoffs, and Micah is back out there. So, he put his mind to it, and he did it. And we knew it. Micah is a fighter, and he cares, and he loves us.
I think Micah, I think he's more excited than everybody else just to be back out there. It's great to see him out there running around. Fresh legs for him, he's running around everywhere making plays.
It's been great, having him back out there, having basically everybody back, it's a blessing, and we're just thankful to have him back.
I think getting all these guys back, it's good for the morale, and this team's been through a lot this year, So we just got to keep chugging along and just keep taking it day by day.
To me, that's about as resilient of an effort to make it back to this team and be out there, and it was tangible, as palpable, as infectious today to see him out there and, lit a spark under us. It was fun. It was just fun to see, and, he had a lot of good points to talk about and to just kind of see where his mindset is and how he's wired, and that's why he's been the way he is and the player he's been for so long. That's just how he's made.
He's one of our captains for a reason. We love the guy. I've gotten to know him quite well. So he's been here as long as I've been here. And just to know the emotions that he went through early in the season and to get back out here and start practicing. And, now we got to do our job and do everything we can to allow him to come back.
All right, that's Sound Bits presented by Tim Hortons. Get the app, get the rewards. Twitter poll question for you. What's the one thing you want to see from the Bills in their playoff game against the Dolphins? Obviously, we all want to see a win, but what's the path to that victory that you'd like to witness on Sunday when they kick it off at 1 o'clock? We go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to call, and there is an open line for you. But we lead off with John in Omaha. What do you got for us, John?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You bet.
Just want to say, I want to see the offense clicking on all cylinders, get that energy like we had last year going into the postseason where everybody just thought this team can't be beat. There was Josh was running, Josh was throwing. Everything just seemed to be clicking on all cylinders all the way up until the tail end of the Kansas City game. And then we picked up the season right where we left off, just going nuts on the Rams and the Titans. And it seems like we've had a lot more one possession games, I think, to get the points back up, get the offense clicking. That's kind of what I want to see. I also had a question. One, I'd like to see if there's an update on Merv, see how he's doing. And then also, I wanted to see if from previous experience, if we do end up in that game in Atlanta, if you guys know how the Bills Mafia has typically traveled to Atlanta.
Well, I mean, if I do know if you're in the Buffalo area, there are direct flights to Atlanta. So that's one way. But you're in Omaha, so not quite sure. I mean, I know they have an airport in Omaha, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to figure that out. I know that there really isn't any further ticket information out on that yet for obvious reasons, because we don't even know if that game's going to exist. So there's that. But as far as the offense is concerned, I would say the good news is in the last 3 weeks, the Bills have scored over 30 points. They averaged 34 points per game over their final three outings, which is a touchdown increase over their season average of 28.4.
Yeah, but let's remember, they're probably not going to look as good as they did in the wild card round a year ago against the New England Patriots, where they never took a loss on a play. They never
punted.
Never punted. Every possession they got every single yard they could possibly get, and it ended in a touchdown. It was a perfect game offensively. So don't, you know, think that it could. I doubt it. But yeah, I get what you mean. They were humming at the beginning of the playoffs last year. So yeah, it would be great to see them look that slick and sharp. But man, oh man, don't expect perfection.
Yeah, I mean, typically when you get to the playoffs, it is harder to play at your best because the team you're playing is usually a pretty darn good football team. I mean, you're talking about the seven best teams in your conference. You know, so
yeah.
You're playing better caliber opponents, so it's going to be harder for you to excel the way you have against some of the lesser teams during the course of the season. But I'm encouraged that they've averaged 34 points a game over their last three games rolling into the playoffs. That's an encouraging sign for me. You know, you can argue the caliber of their opponents over those 3 weeks as much as you want, but one of those games is against this team when
right.
They scored 32 points on the Dolphins. So there you go. I'm encouraged by it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There is – and just one last thing. There is no update that we have on Murph. You know, the Murphy family's handling that stuff, and that's kind of where it sits. And it's not our place to provide that. Not that we know anything different. So we only know what you guys have seen when the team released a statement last week. We have no further updates beyond
right.
that.
And also, Bills fans travel well. So they'll – and neither one of these teams, if it is indeed a neutral site game, it's going to be between the Bills and the Chiefs. Both those teams travel well, and they're – you know, they'll sell that game out in 36 hours.
Yeah.
As fast as they can sell the tickets, it'll be gone. And I'm sure – and, you know, season ticket holders from both clubs will get priority, all that stuff to go. I don't know how that works, but whatever. Well, that's a long way away.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones, and it's Sam in East Amherst. What do you got for us, Sam?
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
The one matchup that I'm kind of not really worried about, but I'm going to be really interested in seeing, and I don't think it's being talked about enough, is the Bradley Chubb and Spencer Brown matchup. Spencer Brown's been up and down all year, and for giving up that much for Bradley Chubb, I'm really interested to see if he's going to turn into the pass rusher that they want him to be, and I think that'll be a really interesting matchup to watch out throughout the entire game.
Yeah, Chubb is dealing with an ankle and a hand injury, didn't practice too much, or he's limited in practice over the last couple of days, and he actually was reported that he had his playing time curtailed in the Week 18 game that the Dolphins just finished. So I don't know how – I don't know how close to 100% he will be.
Right.
But he was not at 100% in their last game against the Jets, even though they played really well defensively against the Jets, only allowing six points.
Bradley Chubb, in the last game against the Bills, had two tackles and a quarterback hit. This is a Dolphins defensive front that more often than not needs to blitz to generate consistent pressure. Even with Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips, they have had issues getting consistent pressure on the quarterbacks. And as a result, they have to blitz. And they have some pretty intricate blitz packages. Josh Allen was talking about those yesterday, and Sean McDermott was asked about them yesterday. And
he was basically saying, yeah, you have to know who's dropping out and where they're coming from. And Josh was saying, you know, they'll have guys drop out and cover up the middle of the field where the quick release throws are to kind of make you pat the ball. So Josh is aware of that. But I'm just going to be honest. Bradley Chubb has got to be a disappointment for the Dolphins. I mean, they traded a first-round pick and signed him to a $115 million extension before he put his hand in the dirt on the on a game field for him. And he's got 2.5 sacks in 7 games. That's not the production you're looking for from a guy you just paid $115 million. And I know, you know, he's playing with new guys. He's getting acclimated to their system. Yickety-yackety-yoop. Go make a play, bro. Like, what are you doing?
Well, okay, so he's got all this money in his pocket, and he doesn't – I will say this. Sometimes, and as a, from a player's perspective, one of the common mind frames is, listen, they didn't – I'm not here to get busted up during the regular season. When the playoffs start, watch me.
Okay.
So you could make that argument that Chubb is sitting out there going, listen, they're going to forget all about this first 7 games when I come in here and dominate these playoffs. That's what you got to kind of think – and put the positive spin on it. Now, certainly the injuries aren't going to have something to say about that.
Yeah.
But we all know the Bills are the same way. They did the same thing with Von Miller. They brought him in to be the closer. Mm-hmm. That they brought him in to for now. They could have put him on the shelf for 17 weeks and gotten him ready and brought him in now, and everybody would have been just fine with that. And of course, now it's not going to work out for that either because he's injured. But this is when a player like Chubb and any player in the NFL understands this is when they care. This is when they care. You're in the playoff race. Right. They're in the champs. They got all this stuff. And certainly they went through some swoons in the regular season where you'd like to see the guy jump in and help. But now is the time when he can achieve complete and utter redemption with a couple of good games.
Well, I'd like to know what he was doing 3 weeks ago when this team was on a 4-game losing streak and they really needed a win against a division opponent to even stay in the race for the division,
and
he laid an egg.
There is that, too.
So
there is that, too.
I don't know how much more the playoffs are going to motivate him, but maybe they will. Who knows? We got to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. And I think we've got a little special something brewing for our own lunch here, Steve. We'll let you know what that is when we come back. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Oh, snap. Snapdragon apples are now available. Fuel your game day adventures with Snapdragon apples, now available at Wegmans. Snapdragon apples, the official apple of your Buffalo Bills. And speaking of Snapdragon apples, Steve, this lunch break is presented by Snapdragon, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Today we have a healthy grain bowl, which features the Snapdragon apples.
And it is really, really good.
They got a monster crunch, incredible juiciness, and sweet, snappy flavor. So as we enter the new year, we have a healthy grain bowl that Steve was just elevating here. These were prepared by the good folks at Delaware North for us. And
they're really good.
In here, you know, sweet potatoes, chickpeas, also known as garbanzo beans, quinoa, also known as, Steve?
Couscous.
Couscous.
All right, got that right.
And lots of other healthy goodness in there. I see some arugula in there, some feta cheese, some
really
red onion.
Good.
I'm a big fan of the red onion and salad.
Yeah, really good.
Healthy meal to kick off your new year. That includes Snapdragon apples, which is full of, did you know this, naturally energizing sugars to fuel any adventure you might have, Steve. They're now available at Wegmans and other retailers.
Unfortunately for our listeners, we're going to be chewing and smacking the entire
rest of
the show.
Well, you might. I'll try to carry on the show.
I'll wait till we go to commercial.
But it was beautifully arranged earlier, but we were encouraged to mix it thoroughly.
30 seconds ago, it looked great.
To work through the salad, so you got a little bit of everything in just about every bite. But I mean, diving into this as soon as this segment's over, because I snuck a couple of bites before we came back from break. I would not have guessed that sweet potato would work this well in a salad, but
it
does.
It's really good.
I'm pretty impressed by that.
It's really
and
good.
Surprised, pleasantly surprised. And I've been good with the Snapdragon apples in these salads since they started bringing them into us. Because
see, we went for weeks talking about Snapdragon apples without ever having one. Right?
Yeah, Steve was like,
when are they getting
here?
When are they going to get here? And then when they started showing up.
Because they didn't get here till October.
Listen, I'm mowing them down. I got bags of them at the house.
Yep. Well, they were nice enough to bring bags in for everybody in the building right around the holidays. So you could take a whole bag of them home. It's been great.
Really good.
So, yeah, our thanks to Snapdragon and the good folks at Delaware North for putting that grain bowl together for us. And they won't last long. I can promise you that. Let's get back to the phones, though, Steve, where we are asking people, what is the one thing you want to see from the Bills in their playoff game against the Dolphins? Somebody was concerned about the Spencer Brown-Bradley Chubb matchup. They want to see Spencer have a bang-up day against him. Some other people are talking about the secondary and its current status. Let's see what Dave in Florida has in mind. Dave, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Food looks good.
Yeah, thanks.
Food looks good up there.
No, it's delicious.
I want to piggyback on Steve's comments yesterday about watch out for this onside kick nonsense and these fake punts. I'm very concerned about that.
So you're expecting Miami to be a desperate team and do anything they need to?
Yep, and I think we need to spy on Tyreek Hill. That Trey Davis will probably handle that, right?
Tre'Davious White, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. They move Tyreek around, so when that usually happens, and we got to move along, Dave. We're up against the break here, so thanks. They'll move Tyreek around from time to time, and you know, I don't know that the Bills have done a little bit of that this year since Trey came back in the lineup, where he's followed guys for periods of games. I don't remember him doing it wire to wire in a game. I suppose it's possible. I tend to think, Steve, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree with this, with an anticipated third-string quarterback as their starter, I don't know that you have to follow Tyreek the whole time, because Thompson's not going to be as effective in getting the ball to him as consistently as a Tua. You know
maybe,
what I'm saying?
Maybe, but the way with the state of their offense right now with this quarterback situation and their offensive line nicked, you got to think they know their one hope is Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. They're going to find out every different way they can to get the ball out there and get him in some space right now.
They might even have him lining up in the backfield,
Tyreek,
for all we know. I mean, he was a running back and a receiver in college, so it's not like that's a foreign concept to him.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they line him up in the backfield on occasion and just put the ball in his hands instead of throwing it to him.
Those guys are the key.
Yeah.
They're the key.
Let's go to Roy in Delvan, is it? What's up, Roy?
Yes, Delvan, New York.
Yeah.
South of Arcade. It's two things quickly, and that is I'd like to see the Bills against Miami stop dropping catchable passes because they're one of the leaders in the league. Second thing is the Bills need to put more pressure on the unexperienced quarterbacks in order to allow the backfield to work better on the receivers. And that's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks very much, Roy. Appreciate it. Drop passes have been a problem this season, and you are right. They are up near the top of the league as a team in drop passes. So it's been a problem, and it kind of surfaced again last week in the game against the Patriots. So they just got to get on that, whether it's extra hours on the jugs machine or, you know, making sure your hands are placed properly catch a football.
I'm a former wideout. And I've dropped my share passes.
Everybody's going to drop some.
I'll say this, though. In some of the things that have happened lately, some of it's on Josh. Like one of the throws low and behind Gabe.
There was one that carried him out of bounds. He couldn't get both feet down.
And some of it's the quarterback. Not all of
it. That's valid.
But some of it. And the receiver's job is to help the guy out. If he can't get it there or is, you know, hurried it or whatever, the receiver's job is to make it work.
Yeah.
I think some of it is Josh and sometimes he hurries the throw right when he sees it, wants to get rid of it quick, and gets rid of it a little too quickly, and it leads to a little bit of an off-target throw. Certainly not all of them. The bomb, the Gabe Davis in the end zone, was right on the money, just like the Diggs one was, and Gabe just couldn't hold on to it. You know, so it's a two-way street. And also, for that, pressuring their quarterback, you've got to defend the Dolphins' passing game at both ends, both in the pocket at the quarterback spot and then at the other end where he's throwing it. You got to defend it at both ends. If you can get pressure, awesome. That negates the need on that play to get it at the other end. But he's going to get rid of the ball once in a while. You got to defend it at both ends.
Here is the top drop pass teams in the league this year. Green Bay number one at 30. Buffalo, Tampa, and Jacksonville tied for second, all with 29. You know who's tied for, what would that be, fifth? The Miami Dolphins with 27. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more about those Miami Dolphins with SI.com Dolphins reporter Alan Pupar is coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are, hour number two on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined now by Sports Illustrated Dolphins writer Alan Pupar joining us here on the show. And we got to start here, Alan, because the shoe is firmly on the other foot from where it was in week three when the Bills had five defensive starters out due to injury, didn't have starting center Mitch Morse, and then they were dropping like flies during the course of the game. Now it's the Dolphins that look like a MASH unit. My God, that injury report yesterday was ridiculous.
Yeah, and then I might offer that they had it worse than the Bills did in week three. If you're looking at the offense right now, they're looking at the possibility of not having five starters on offense, starting with Tua Tagovailoa. Raheem Mostert's got a broken thumb. And then you got three guys on the offensive line. Teron Armstead, who's a question mark with his list of 17 different injuries. Liam Eikenberg, who just got back into the lineup last week, had a hand injury, left and then came back against the Jets. And then we got an issue at right tackle where Brandon Shell, who had been starting, has ankle knee injuries, and he hasn't practiced either of the first 2 days this week. So, it's a mess in terms of injuries. Not exactly how you want to go into a playoff game, that's for sure.
Certainly some of those guys will probably give it a go, so to speak, and not be 100% out after getting some time off. But even if they do, it's interesting because, you know, you get their Teron Armstead. He's got like four things going on, right? Toe, knee, hip.
Peck and hip.
And peck. And then, you know, they've all got a long list of this stuff. So most of them, it seems to be stuff they're going to have to deal with, but they'll probably be able to go at least a handful of these guys.
Yeah, the problem is that I'm not sure. Because, again, like as I mentioned, Mostert's got a broken thumb, which for a running back who you want to have carry the ball, not exactly ideal. Tua's already been ruled out. Brandon Shell, Mike McDaniel told us on Monday that it's not likely. Eichenberg's a big question mark. And then Armstead, he's been injured the entire year. He's rarely practiced. Pretty much every week it's come down to Sunday morning, but he's missed the past two games. And then he's had three injuries for a while now, and then he had the hip injury a couple of weeks ago, and he hasn't played since that popped up. He missed the last two games against New England and against the Jets. So, see, knock on wood that he's in the lineup because he makes a huge difference. Everybody's talking about not having two in the lineup. Well, a lot of the times the backup quarterbacks haven't had Armstead, and that's played a big role as well in the offense not performing as well when two is out of the lineup because the pass protection just doesn't hold up. They can't do the same things offensively if Armstead's not in the lineup. And at this point, you keep your fingers crossed that he'll be able to go, but it's far, 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 far from, you know, from a certainty that he'll be able to play.
So obviously, Tua is a big loss because the offense clearly functions best when he is in there. He's clearly their most efficient passer, probably their most accurate passer, and probably their best anticipatory passer. All of that being said, can Skylar Thompson at least make the offense functional as you see it?
I think he can, but a lot of it depends on what the offensive line does in front of him. Because a lot of the times what happens is pressure gets to Thompson fairly quickly. He's not going to get the ball out nearly as quickly as Tua does, because that's one of Tua's strengths. And Thompson kind of wants to see things develop in front of him a little bit more. And one funny thing is one of Thompson's longest completions last week was like a 36-yarder, I think it was, to Mike Gesicki. While on the play, there was a deeper receiver, and it got to Gesicki because his arm was hit as he was throwing the ball. So that just kind of illustrates the issues they have up front. But, I mean, Thompson, I think there's a lot of comparisons being made of what Brock Purdy, a fellow rookie seventh-round pick, is doing in San Francisco. Well, I mean, San Francisco has got talent all over the place on offense, and the Dolphins are not quite at that level. I think if the offensive line can perform and hold up a little bit, I think they can get some things done more so than they did against the Jets. And the other thing against the Jets, if we look back at that 11-6 final, I think the Dolphins were ultra conservative on offense in that game because they knew the Jets offense was injury riddled, number one, not very good, number two, so they didn't have to do that much offensively to win the game. That's obviously not the case with the Bills. They're going to have to do a lot more offensively, and I think they might open things up. I'm going to go back to it again. The offensive line has to do its job, and if Skylar Thompson is given protection, yeah, I do think he has the ability to make some things work offensively.
It seems that the best chance the Dolphins would have in the scenarios that we're talking about would be find some way, shape, or form to get the ball to Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill as fast as you can, either line them up in the backfield and hand it to them, or give them quick passes and let them work in space. Those two guys really are the hope for the Dolphins to come out and play well in this game.
Offensively, yeah, no question. The running game was really good when the teams played at Highmark Stadium on December 17th. Is it going to be as effective depending on the offensive line issues and with no Raheem Mostert? Probably not. And this is where Hill and Waddle, with their ability to turn like a 10-yard catch into a 60-yard touchdown, can make a difference. And that certainly obviously would help if they can hit on one or two of those. I think the big thing with the Dolphins is their margin for error in this game is going to be microscopic. If they have the opportunity to hit a big play, they need to connect every single time. And then they need to be able to get a long gain off a really short throw, whether it be a short cross or a wide receiver screen, jet sweep, you know, one of those things.
Flipping it over to the defensive side, Alan, I saw that total defense over the last 3 weeks, Miami's up around the top of the league. They lost two of those three games to Green Bay and New England, due in part to some defensive touchdowns being scored against them off turnovers. Second in yards per play allowed, second in run defense, second in yards per carry average. How much do you attribute that to the level of their opponents that they were playing, and how much do you attribute that to, hey, this defense is finishing on an uptick?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe a combination of both. Against the Jets on Sunday, I mean, I was looking at the Jets and felt sorry for them because, my Lord, was that a really bad offense with injury issues on top of everything else. And Joe Flacco was sitting back there, and he had a guy in his face the second he dropped back, even though Dolphins didn't get any sacks. There's some talent on defense, and they have the ability, you know, to get things done. And if the Dolphins are going to pull off this upset on Sunday, yeah, the defense is going to have to come up big. It's going to have to create some turnovers. There was one in the game in December. It was a fumble forced by Jalen Phillips on a sack, and that's the recipe for success. Again, the Dolphins have to have everything pretty much go right for them to be able to win this game. And that includes forcing a turnover and not let Josh Allen go crazy with the running. Dolphins finished sixth in the NFL in run defense, but the one area where they've had problems there is running quarterbacks, whether it be Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields. or Josh Allen. So that's an area where, again, they have to tighten up a little bit.
What have the Dolphins learned about playing Josh Allen? I mean, certainly the running quarterback does give them problems. There's absolutely no question about it. But Josh Allen has really played well against the Dolphins, and they just don't or haven't been able to derail him as of yet. What do you think what do you think their plan is, and how is it going to be different this time than it has been in the last, well, 8 or 10 games against Josh Allen, all 8 or 10 of them?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they haven't solved him, period. They've played well against him for like portions of games, like the first half in the game at Buffalo last year, the first quarter in the season finale in 2020 before Allen and the Bills went nuts in the second quarter, but never for a full game. And eventually they just haven't found an answer for him. I think what they have to do is basically try to get pressure with their front four up front when they line up with four guys to get pressure, you know, maintain the edge to not get killed by, you know, bootlegs out with Allen getting outside too easily. But they have to play very sound fundamental ball, excuse me, and then, you know, tackle very well. But like, as I mentioned, they have not really solved, even in the game they won in Miami in September, it's not because the Bills didn't move the ball. They just couldn't finish drives. And there were a couple of self-inflicted mistakes from the Bills that eventually became the difference in the outcome. But that's part of the tough task. I mean, this is why, even if the Dolphins had everybody available on offense, going up to Buffalo and winning this game would still be a major challenge, because the Dolphins have just not really solved Josh Allen. And now they have to do it with an offense that, you know, might be limited in terms of what it can chip in.
And, you know, if you look at last week's game for the Bills against New England, the Patriots defense decided they weren't going to give him an escape route to lengthen a play, make an off-script play, play some backyard football, and they kept him hemmed in the pocket pretty effectively for most of the game. They let him out one time, and he throws a 42-yard touchdown to John Brown on a backyard football play, but they were committed to giving him no escape lanes, and, you know, their offense was good enough to keep him in the game for a while. That doesn't sound like Coach Boyer's approach, though, defensively, more often than not. I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm just wondering if they might try to take a page out of New England's book last week.
Oh, I could see that happening, because, again, as I mentioned, everything else they've tried against Josh Allen hasn't worked. Or they may know, maybe try the bend but don't break approach, you know, just. And one problem for the Dolphin defense all year has been getting off the field on third down. And this is where they have to hone in. And if you remember the game in Buffalo in December, that long game winning drive, there were a couple of third down conversions that completely known to prove the difference in the outcome. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if the Dolphins tried a different approach. And even if it means, you know, again, perhaps a little bit less of an aggressive approach with the pass rush, as you mentioned, to make sure to keep Allen in the pocket, make him eventually have to throw the ball. But that doesn't come without its risk, as well, because Allen, if you give him long enough, and that was one of the big plays in that game in December, was, I believe, it was a 15-yard completion after they got a second and 18 after a sack by Zach Sealer on that game-winning drive. And Allen had all day to throw and eventually found Gabe Davis, which made it a 3rd and 3 that they were able to convert and then go on for that long game-winning drive.
Also, some of the rhetoric coming out of Miami hasn't had to do with the Dolphins at all. It's had to do with Tom Brady becoming on the table for ownership, back into that, you know, they're going back into that abyss of starting to think about replacing Tua, as Tua's sitting there trying to come out of concussion protocol, and they got all this other stuff. How big a distraction is all of that? And is it, I mean, it can't be helping. What are your thoughts on the rhetoric that is surrounding the team that has nothing to do with what they're doing this weekend?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. And I mean, Steve, you played in the league like a long time. I think once you get into the prep mode for the game, Tua is not even playing in the game. So if anybody would be bothered by that kind of talk, it would be Tua, and he's not playing. I don't think Skylar Thompson really he's going to be worried about anything beyond the game on Saturday, Sunday, which is such a huge opportunity for him as a rookie seventh round pick. And as I mentioned before, also it's inevitable because, and it's a discussion that everybody's going to dive into very deeply after the season ends. Especially if it ends on Sunday, if you're the Miami Dolphins, what do you do at quarterback moving forward with Tua, who had a very, very good year? I mean, he had a great year for most of the season until his production dipped a little bit toward the end. And then with the concussion issues, he's missed four starts. Every season he's been in the NFL, he's missed starts. And now we've arrived at the point where the Dolphins could sign him to a long-term extension if they wanted to. Kind of hard to see them doing that right now because of, again, the durability cloud over Tua, which fair or unfair is absolutely there. Could they exercise a fifth-year option to keep him, you know, under team control for 2023 and 2024? That's certainly a possibility, but they also have to think, okay, what's our long-term plan at quarterback? And this is where I would tell you that Tom Brady is not a long-term plan. If you bring in Tom Brady, it's for, I'm going to guess, 1 year at the most. And then you're kind of back to the square one in 2024 is what do you do for a long-term answer to quarterback in a division where you have to deal with Josh Allen twice right. a year.
Yeah, have fun with that. yeah, it's interesting to say the least in terms of what they're going to do there. Red zone defense, Allen, hasn't been terribly great. I mean, they did fine against the Jets last week, but as you said, you're talking about, you know, a washed up Joe Flacco and a myriad of other problems with the Jets. The Bills went 4 of 5 in the red zone in the last matchup. It was a big reason why Miami couldn't finish that game with a win. And I know New England went 2 for 2 a couple of weeks ago. What is it that's been tough for them to get stops down there and at the very least force field goals instead of touchdowns?
Yeah, that's a good question. I look back at that Buffalo game. To me, everything boiled down to Josh Allen was just won the game. Because I don't know that the Dolphins, even though it wasn't perfect, I'm not sure that they could have played a much better game under the circumstances. But Josh Allen just beat them. But going back to like the overall red zone issues, well, the fact that the Dolphins have not been able to generate a great pass rush with only four guys is a problem. We mentioned the offensive line being decimated. They've had injuries in the secondary all year. Even the one guy who's been able to play. I mean, actually, they've had two starters who've been able to play the whole year is Javon Holland and Xavier Howard. But Howard's dealt with stuff pretty much the whole year, has not had a Xavier Howard type year, even though he made the Pro Bowl. Cough, cough, by reputation only. And that's been a problem. I mean, they can only cover guys for so long, and the pass rush is not getting to quarterbacks.
All right, so let's take that a step further. Bradley Chubb comes in. A first-round draft pick goes out. $115 million goes to Bradley Chubb's bank account, at least over the next several years, and he's got 2.5 sacks in a Dolphins uniform. Mm-hmm. Are there already ticked-off Dolphins fans as to the ransom that was paid for Bradley Chubb in light of the results they've gotten through, what is it now, 7 games?
No question. I mean, yeah, a lot of the fans are not happy about it. And then throwing darts at Chris Greer because he's a favorite target if the Dolphins are not blowing out every opponent. But no, and they paid a huge price for him, and it's fair to question the impact he's made. Even before now, he's dealing with ankle and thumb injuries. He missed a game, came back against the Jets, played very limited snaps, likely to play this week. How much more is he going to be able to play than he played against the Jets? Not sure. But this is a guy for what they gave up and the contract they gave him. You expect him. I don't want to use Von Miller, but I think a lot of fans were kind of looking for maybe a similar kind of impact. And first of all, he's not Von Miller to begin with, but it hasn't been there. That's been very disappointing. And it doesn't help also that you can make the argument the Dolphins, if they were going to make that kind of move, they'd have been better off trading for Roquan Smith, who just got voted, you know, Ravens team MVP, and it would have filled a major need on the Dolphins for a very athletic playmaking inside linebacker, which the Dolphins really don't have.
What has been the problem up front? Because Christian Wilkins seems to be playing really well. Jalen Phillips seems to be light years ahead of where he was just a year ago for this defense. Bradley Chubb, while you're right, he hasn't been effective. I was telling Brownie earlier, if Chubb comes in and knocks it out of the park in the playoff, now his injuries aside, if he came in, it would all be forgiven if he became that guy for the next 3 weeks, or and you could get him on a little run here. But they seem to be talented enough. What is the problem, aside from injuries, I suppose?
Well, it's pass rush related because, again, against the run, they've been really, really good. And it's largely because Christian Wilkins, I mean, just had a phenomenal year. I mean, the guy is like Mr. TFL. I mean, had almost 100 tackles from an interior defensive line position, which is ridiculous. Zach Sealer's turned into a really, really good NFL starting defensive lineman. So against the run, no issues whatsoever. It's in the pass rush game, it's they just do not win very often when they're rushing four guys. For them to get pressure, it's more often than not, they have to bring in a blitzer, a fifth guy or a sixth guy, and their secondary, again, partly because of all the injuries they have, hasn't been as good as it's been in the past. The Dolphins really have missed Byron Jones, who's a really, really good cornerback. And when they had Byron Jones on one side and Xavier Howard on the other side, locking up receivers one-on-one, it allowed them the freedom to be so much more aggressive up front and line up and put nine guys near the line of scrimmage, even if obviously they weren't bringing all nine guys, but they could show different looks and without worrying, about coverage as much as they do now. So, and having said that, they have a really good success story in Kader Kohou, who's a rookie free agent who started a cornerback pretty much the whole year, who's been really pretty good in coverage, an absolutely phenomenal tackler for a cornerback who's got a little bit of an issue getting handsy down the field and getting called for a few defensive holding penalties. But the biggest issue for them, though, is they just have not been able to get home with a four-man rush.
Alan, thanks as always for bringing us up to speed on the Dolphins. We know you'll be covering the game on Sunday for Sports Illustrated, so we'll keep our ear to the ground on your coverage throughout the offseason because that quarterback thing is going to be really interesting with that group, man.
Never a dull moment with the Miami Dolphins, that's for sure.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate the time. That's Alan Pupar, Sports Illustrated Dolphins writer, joining us. We will take a break because when we come back, we've got this week's legend of the game in studio. You know him. We all know him. Former number 22, one Fred Jackson, joining us in studio next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and pleased to be joined now on the line by this week's legend of the game when the Bills host the Dolphins in Sunday's wild card playoff game. It is Fred Jackson joining us. The legend of the game is presented by the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills. Download and visit the Bills app. Enter for a chance to win a $250 BFLO Store gift card and a signed Fred Jackson football. How about that? How we doing, Fred? Good to see you, man.
Not too bad, man. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're doing good. I wanted to start here. Last week's game, you did a little kick return duty in your time. What'd you think of Nyheim Hines' effort on Sunday?
You know what, man? It was the icing on the cake, man. It couldn't happen at a better time. You know, it couldn't happen at a better time for, you know, not only – you know, me as a Bills fan, all the Bills Mafia out there, all of his teammates, but people around the country, man, it was great to see, you know, and I'm glad it couldn't happen to a better person too. You know, I haven't met Hakeem personally, but I've heard nothing but good things about him. So I'm happy he was able to go out there and make a play for his team.
So you're coming back into town to be the legend of the game and a playoff game, something that, you know, eluded you during your time with the Bills. What are your thoughts on coming back and seeing this team in the midst of such a run like they have been for the last 4 or 5 years and being a part of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's special, man. When I got the phone call or as a possibility of doing it, I was ecstatic. You know, it was something I wanted to be a part of. I love watching these guys, love what they're doing, love what the coaching staff is doing, love, you know, everything about this team right now. So to be able to come back and be the legend of the game, you know, as they go on this march towards this Super Bowl is a lot of fun, man. I want to be able to be a part of it in some kind of way. And I know that that building's going to be electric, man, and it's going to be fun to be in the building with all those guys.
Yeah, we appreciate you not big-timing us like Fitz did. You know, Fitz basically said, hey, if you get to the AFC Championship game, then you can call me. That's pretty well, much – he's too big-time now.
That sounds about right from Fitzy. I'm going to get off the phone with you guys, and I'm going to call him right now and blow his phone up for that.
Yeah. But this game – meeting a team for the third time, the Dolphins coming in. The Dolphins are all nicked up. They got the third string quarterback. I mean, one of the things you have to fight against is like, well, let's just get through this game and get on to the next one. You know, you're not entitled to win this game. You got to go out and do it.
Yeah, and you know that they're going to be motivated. They're coached well. They'll show up ready to play. So. It's on these guys just go out and do what they're capable of doing. You know, go out and make the plays that they're capable of making. Show why you're considered the better team, what it is you bring to the table. And as long as those guys go out and handle those things, I think they'll be just fine.
What are your thoughts, Fred, about, you know, Buffalo's rushing attack? I mean, it took a little while for them to get some traction in the run game to serve as a complement to the passing attack, but much like last season, down the stretch here, they've kind of hit a groove, and you know James Cook's coming on and getting more time on the field. What's your thoughts about that group and the ground game here down the stretch?
Man, I absolutely love them. You know, Singletary's been Singletary, man. And I've loved the way he's worked all season long. You know, he's kind of an unheralded guy where we don't see him getting 25. You know, 30 carries a game. But when his number is called, man, he's showed up and he's produced every time. James continues to be, you know, James Cook, the reason that he was drafted and brought into Buffalo. He's continuing to get better. He's, you know, hit tremendous strides. And the thing that I'm happy about is it's going into the playoffs where they're going to need those guys to really step up. You know, weather's not going to be the greatest every time they step out on the field. So you're going to have a running game. You know what Josh brings to the table with his legs. So to be able to not just count on him to do that, knowing you can turn around and hand the ball off to a guy like Singletary or to James takes a lot of pressure off of him, and it makes it a lot easier for the offensive line when they have two tremendous running backs like that. They're like that behind them. So it's been awesome to see it kind of progress to where it is now, and you know hopefully they can continue to build on that and continue to get better, and it carries them all the way to the Super Bowl because those guys have the potential to take them there.
It's one of the problems with watching a team like Josh Allen has, you know, been the quarterback of for the last couple of years. Last year, they come into the playoffs. They get the New England Patriots in Buffalo, and it's an absolute thing of perfection. No punts, never took a negative play until they knelt down to put the game away. Every drive ended in a touchdown. I mean, how do you temper those expectations for Bills fans?
Yeah, I mean As a player, that's what you want. You know, you want those things to happen. You want to be in absolute control from start to finish. You have to be confident in what it is, whatever game plan it is you're putting together. You know, the coaches are going to do a tremendous job breaking down film. Like you said, it's the third time they play these guys. They'll have a great scheme, and you have the players and the potential to go out and dominate like you did last year in the opening round. It's just about you to go out there and execute, not overlook these guys because – obviously, they have some tremendous talent on that side of the field. They're going to come in. They're going to be willing to compete. They're going to compete early for sure. They're going to try and weather the storm and make this a sloppy game where they can get, you know, into the fourth quarter and have a chance of winning it. But if you go out and you go handle your business, you know you're the better team. You know all you have to do is execute the game plan that your coaches are going to put together and, you know, see where it goes from there. No, it's the playoffs. So every team is capable of winning when you're playing. And you just go out and handle your business and let the cards lie. And at the end of the day, you know, hope that you've made more plays than the other team and the rest will take care of itself.
All right. So Fred, you know, you got a little more leisure time at your disposal here. I know your son's tearing it up on the field, but who would you say amongst your former teammates you're probably keeping in touch with the most if you had two or three to pick from?
Well, I can tell you the top three is easily Fitz, Marshawn, and Aaron Williams are the guys that I'm talking to and keep in touch with the most.
Yeah. And give us an idea of, you know, how do you expect this game to transpire this Sunday? You're going to be there and you're going to do the thing before the game and it's going to, you know, it's going to be awesome. How do you expect this to transpire with the Dolphins coming in? It's a very familiar foe. Bills fans are used to cheering against them. And, you know, these teams see each other. I mean, they see each other on film when they're playing in the division. They see them play each other. They see them play other people. How's this go?
Yeah, it's going to be – it's hopefully, you know, I can come out there. I get the crowd going, and the Bills just feed off of that and come out the gate, you know, hit the Dolphins in the mouth. They're going to be, you know, ready for that. They know what's coming. When they walk in, like you said, they've walked into this stadium, you know, already this year. They know what to expect from Bills Mafia. But I'm hoping, and just like everybody else, I'm hoping that the Bills just become too much for them. You know, I think they go out there, they have some possessions, put some points up. I don't know how good of a quarterback he is, but I don't think a guy who's the third string quarterback can keep up with Josh Allen playing against the Buffalo Bills defense. I think, you know, it just eventually becomes too much for him, even with the weapons that he has on that offensive side of the ball. Granted, they're going to try and take some pressure off of him. But I think those guys make enough plays that it becomes something that they're overcome and drowning trying to keep up with the Bills and the offensive explosions that they're able to put up. So I think it's a game early, but I think eventually the Bills become too much for the Dolphins to handle.
Fred, thanks for the time. Safe travels up here this weekend. We look forward to seeing you. Please give our best to your wife, Danielle.
Will do. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Fred. That's Fred Jackson, your legend of the game for this weekend's wild card matchup, Bills-Dolphins. Legend of the game presented by the BFLO Store, the official retailer of the Buffalo Bills.
He's right. I mean, you put it into terms like that. I love the way he said it. It's going to be hard to imagine a third-string quarterback keeping up with Josh Allen playing against the Buffalo Bills defense. It's a big ask. Yeah. We've seen it happen, though. I mean, and at this point, you hate to feel like that because the game is so final. You can't be wrong.
Win or go home.
Yeah, if you lose, if you make that mistake, you're done. And all the effort and the months of work and the entire season is wasted. So you got to stay on it like you're playing against Tua and Dan Marino and Joe Montana and all those jokers, you know, and not Skylar Thompson.
He almost looks like a wide receiver. Did you see that footage we were showing to our MSG viewers? He's walking alongside Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. He almost
looks like Gesicki.
Well, Gesicki's kind of a beanpole, but I mean, he kind of looks like he's got a receiver body. It's like he's like Tannehill. Remember, Tannehill used to be a receiver in college, so you understand why he would have a receiver. He kind of has a receiver body. A little Taysom Hill-like, maybe, just not as thick.
Yeah, not quite as thick as Taysom Hill, but yeah, he's an athlete. Certainly, you can see it. And he's going to, you know, think where he's at, and you put it in the most positive light. And, you know, these guys are vetted. I mean, they don't get into the league not having been through some stuff and overcome some obstacles. So, you know, he's back there thinking, you know what? I'm the starting quarterback for the Dolphins.
He's got nothing to lose.
I have nothing to lose. I'm going to let it rip.
Yeah, just go out and let it rip. And nobody expects you to win anyway.
If he comes out and throws a pick six to begin the game or whatever, they're not jerking him. They're not putting Mike Glennon in. You know? You're the guy. So let's go out and just go out and let it rip.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what the coaching staff's going to tell him.
It's really a no-lose for him if you put it in that perspective. He's not expected to win this game.
Yeah.
So if he comes out
pressure
and gains some respect – make some throws, show some courage and leadership. The guy, it helps his career, whether they win or lose. So that's kind of where you're at if you're Skylar Thompson, and you can bet that's right where he's at mentally for this game. He's going to let it rip.
Yeah.
You know he's got Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle out there. Let them go to work for you.
Why not? I mean,
right? That's the whole idea. Why not?
He can just let it all hang out. He really can. We want to get to
those are tough guys to beat, man.
Well, that's true.
Which is why Josh is so tough to beat.
Yeah.
Right? That's where he lives.
Yeah. We wanted to get to the tweet sheet here as we're fast running out of time here on the show. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. As we've been asking you, what's the one thing you want to see from the Bills in Sunday's game with Miami? Sharon leads us off, and she says, the backups. Get our injured players out as soon as possible, and then the rest of the starters after a commanding lead. I'm still concerned about our players getting hurt on a dirty play. So Sharon's already booked it.
Right.
We're going to be up by 24 by the third quarter. Get everybody out of the game after that.
Yeah. Josh will come out
careful.
One series into the second half, and then it's and it's Case Keenum.
Careful with
way.
That line of
right.
thinking.
You better be careful with that. That, like I said, guys that have nothing to lose are difficult to beat.
Listen to this. This is a theme. Ryan says, bury Miami early and sit Josh Allen and the rest of the starters in the fourth quarter. This is the closest to a bye week they can get without actually having one. Take advantage of it. I will say this, Steve. This game, to me, is similar to the season finale against the Dolphins in 2020.
Yes.
I believe that if Buffalo can get up 14-3, you know, 17-7 by, like, early second quarter, I think there's guys on that Dolphins squad that are just going to pack it in. Because much like we saw back in 2020 in the season finale, in which the Dolphins were in a win-and-get-in scenario to the playoffs, they had a rookie in Tua at quarterback. They go down 14-3 early, and they're like, we're not beating these guys with Tua.
56.
They went away. They went looking for the bus.
They went away. You're right.
I think the same thing applies here because you can't tell me these guys, if they're down 17-7 in the second quarter, they think they're coming back and beating this Bills team with Skylar frickin' Thompson at quarterback. I'm sorry. No offense to Skylar, but seriously.
There may be a moment in there where their team goes, you know what, we're not going to get it done. Let's make sure we live another day and yeah. enjoy the offseason without going to rehab, you know. seriously. So – yes, there is that in there. They're not expected to win this game. Everybody and their uncle is hurt on their roster. If they come out, lay an egg early, Bills are, you know, it's 24-7.
Yeah.
Or 24-10. So if they really get, you know, if the Bills get that extra possession and like a turnover and get a score out of it, and they're now starting to get away a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see him packing.
You could see
really
it.
Could.
You could see it easily.
Jeremiah says quickly, a beastly running game with Motor and Cook. 200-plus rushing yards and then 3 touchdowns through the air for Allen. Well, don't get greedy, Jeremiah. Let's not forget, this is a top-5 run defense. That is one thing that the Dolphins actually do well. If they can run up 200-plus yards on that front, look out, man. Look out.
Yeah, that's a big ask as well.
Yeah. All right, we are up against the clock, so we're going to take a break here. Some final thoughts on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Bills Mafia, the first edition of the Buffalo Bills comic cover series, is now on sale. Products include posters, sweaters, and shirts. You can purchase these items exclusively at any Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse Wegmans. Wegmans, the official tailgating headquarters of the Buffalo Bills. Some final thoughts on the tweet sheet quickly, Steve. And we have Owen chiming in with, would love to see the defense force a few more turnovers. The Bills currently have an even turnover differential, which ranks 15th in the league. That's due more to their carelessness with the football through the course of the season. You should not have 27 turnovers. 27 takeaways is a pretty good season.
Yeah, they've done fine in the takeaways. The Bills turning it over a little too much. And that's something you get with
throwing the ball.
I hate to say it, the top-flight quarterbacks do it a lot. Maybe not the old guys like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady because they don't throw it. I mean, because they don't run it. They just throw it away and they live to play another down. But guys like Mahomes and Josh Allen, Joe Burrow's a little bit like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. They don't turn it over too much. But all those guys that get out of the pocket and make some things happen, you kind of got to live with it. It's not great. It's one of the things that's a drawback to that type of quarterback, is that ball's at risk more often. But you also get some bonus plays about every game that you would never get with one of the other guys.
Manny says, obviously healthy players and a win, but most importantly, I'd like to see no drop footballs, fumbles and catches, in parentheses, for the first time, because we need to stop those small mistakes as we head closer to the Super Bowl. And then Rick says, September Bills, you know, fluent offensively and stout defensively. That month, the Bills looked untouchable. Find that, and we might just hoist a Lombardi.
Yeah. It's true. It was good. It was fun there that first month, but we'll see if they can get that back. Certainly, they're getting healthy enough to do it.
Tomorrow's show, we've got, as always, Greg Cosell
and Aditi Kinkabwala. We'll see you at 1.